say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A New Direction. My name's Jay Izzo, and oh, man, another great show. It's so easy. Great authors, great books, great shows. I have the easiest job in the world. I love what I do, and it makes it even more fun when I have an amazing author with a great book. The book is entitled Lead with Hospitality. Listen to the secondary title. Just join me. Join me, right, as you let your friends know. Listen to this. Be human. Oh, could we use some of that today? I think so. Emotionally connect. Can we use some of that today? I think so. Serve selflessly. Can we use any of that today? The answer is nod with me as you're driving along your car, as you're watching me live. Yes, we need all three of those things. Let me just say something about this book. I don't care what business you're in. Do you know what business you're really in? I'll give you a second. You're in the hospitality business. And you say, no, Jay, I'm in the insurance business. No, you're in the hospitality business. You have to learn to connect. You've got to inspire and not just your customers. This is about your people. You say to me, well, Jay, you know, I'm in the oil industry. No, you're in the hospitality business. Ultimately, that's what you're in. Because you have to know how to serve, and you have to know how to connect, and you have to know how to inspire, and you have to know how to be empathetic. It requires that if you want your company, whatever that company is, it requires all these things for your company to be successful, because the most successful companies are hospitable. You say, well, then what is that really? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. Because we're all in the hospitality business. And before you focus on your customers, I am going to argue that you need to focus on your employees. Because if your employees aren't, as my author is going to talk about it down the road, welcomed, they don't feel comfortable, if they don't feel significant, they don't feel important. Well, let's take the opposite of that. What kind of employee do you have? And that's the problem that we have to face today. That's the one that my friend and author, Taylor Scott, is going to talk about today. And let me talk to you just a little bit about him. Taylor Scott is a best-selling author, inspirational keynote speaker, and organizational development consultant. Through his books, workshops, keynotes, and licensed content, he inspires audiences at Fortune 500 companies, universities, community organizations nationwide, and helps them to become their best and deliver their best and experience the best possible life. Taylor leverages personal experiences in 20 years working in the hospitality industry for Disney Parks and Resorts, Gaylord Hotels and Resorts, Wynn Resorts, and the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas to connect with and inspire leaders of all levels. And he joins us now. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show. Welcome to the first time ever, Taylor Scott. Welcome to A New Direction, Taylor.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to be here.
Let's dig into this thing. I don't think we should wait. The book's divided up into four parts, which I think is pretty cool. Just to give the audience just an idea of what the four parts are, four parts of this book are connect, serve, engage, and inspire. I was trying to come up with some sort of crazy other way of putting those letters together, but the fact of the matter is, it is intentional that we do things in this order. And Taylor makes a big point of this in the book, that we've got to connect, we've got to serve, we have to engage, and we have to inspire. And along with that, under each of those, within those parts, there comes a breakdown of how we get there. And so let's just start right there with part one, connect, and let's break into the first part, welcome. And you make a statement as part of chapter one that says, creating a space where people will stay. And we start with the subtitle of find the elephant in the room. And I found this analogy by Jonathan Haidt to be quite unique because I've never seen it before. And so maybe we should start with that, finding the elephant in the room, so that we get that out of the way so that people can understand connecting first and welcoming, and what that means hospitality and leading with hospitality.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is one of those things that when I came across it, I was like, boy, I wish I knew that 20 years ago when I first started, or when I was a young up and coming leader myself. And I also noticed that the great Chip and Dan Heath, you know, not too far from you down there near Raleigh, North Carolina, they used this same research from Jonathan Haidt, who's an NYU psychologist, in their book, Switch, How to Change When Change is Hard. So I thought, man, if they can use it in their book, well, I want to try to use it in mine. And so basically, here's what Jonathan Haidt teaches us in his research and his book, The Happiness Hypothesis. He paints a picture for what's going on inside the human brain at all times. So you know how we have the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain? Well, the left side of the brain, we all know, is responsible for the logic, analysis, intellect, math, things like training, whereas the right side of the brain is responsible for feelings, emotions, creativity, and imagination. So here's what he says. Here's what he says. It's like he's got a metaphor of sorts. He said, picture a human person sitting on top of a 6-ton elephant. Person sitting on top, we'll call that person the rider. The elephant, we'll call them the elephant. So both of these entities, both the rider and the elephant, have a role in the show here. The rider, first of all, represents the left side of the brain, the logic, whereas the elephant represents the right side of the brain, the emotion. And the rider's responsibility is to provide the direction of where this human being is going to go. That's the left brain. The elephant's responsible for providing the energy and enthusiasm to move, the energy and enthusiasm to change directions, the energy and enthusiasm to even spring into action at all. And here's the takeaway for you and me and everybody listening or watching. Here's the takeaway for us as leaders, is if the rider and the elephant, as if to say, if the left brain and the right brain ever disagree on which direction to go or whether or not to move, who's going to win the argument?
The elephant.
Elephant every single time, for a couple reasons. One, he's got a 6-ton weight advantage, for one thing. And the other reason is responsible for the energy and enthusiasm to move. And this is all summed up, we believe, and we use it in all of our stuff, all of our leadership development workshops and content, when I do my keynotes, by the great John Maxwell, who said, we can't move people into action unless we first move them with emotion. And so, if I don't know about you and everybody listening, for me, it was that's why this is one of those things. It was like, man, I wish I knew that when I was first starting out, whether it be as a leader, a salesperson, a marketer, or even as an entrepreneur.
Well, oh, that's a ding.
Sorry.
That's okay. I think what happens with us as human beings is that we often think that we like, or at least we'd like to believe that we make decisions logically, that we've thought it out, we've planned it out, we've analyzed it. And the reality is we really make our decisions emotionally. Every purchase that we make, every decision is driven emotionally. And we don't want to believe it's as big as an elephant. We want to believe it's almost the reverse, that the elephant rides us, if you will, and that we somehow guide it. And it's such a false belief that we have that we do this. And this becomes, I think, as I read your book, this premise is really, really important, because if we're not connecting emotionally with our people, right, which we're going to talk about, we don't have people that follow us at all. And that's problematic. So we move into this chapter called You're Welcome Here. And you define hospitality as the friendly and generous reception and entertaining of guests, visitors, or strangers. And you say the first step in getting anyone to follow you as a respected leader is to first and foremost make them feel welcome. So why is welcoming, tie us into the emotion, and why is it so important as part of our first step in connection?
Yeah, this whole thing, by the way, this whole project, this whole venture, if you will, started for me with just curiosity. Like, I wanted to know, like, why do we love certain leaders more than others? Why are we more inclined to follow certain leaders more than others? Why are we more inspired by some people versus others? And I kept finding some things. And then I had this realization that, man, this is a lot like hospitality, where I had just spent like 20 years working at all those places you mentioned at the top. It reminded me of this keynote speech. I was a housekeeping manager for the opening of Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center in Kissimmee, Florida, right in Orlando, right next door to Walt Disney World. This is 02-02-02, February 2nd, 2002 at 2:02 p.m., fireworks in the atrium, the whole deal. And I'm the 22-year-old version of me, you know, housekeeping manager, my first full-time leadership job out of undergrad. And they brought in a guest speaker to speak to all of us salaried leaders a couple weeks before the opening, or 2 or 3 weeks before the opening. And this dude comes in, he's like, "Friends, let me tell you something. Whether you work in hospitality for the next 2 years or the next 20 years, I want you to remember the essence of hospitality. Gracious hospitality is the ability to make people feel welcome, comfortable, and important." And I'm just sitting out there, and I'm like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Like, that's what I want to do. Like, what's better than that? Making magic for people. And then I went for the next 20 years, and I was a leader in different lines of business for these different brands: Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Wynn, Encore in Las Vegas, Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. And I'm here to tell you, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, and why I wrote this book, is that I believe the essence of inspirational leadership, transformational leadership, is also the ability to make people feel welcome, comfortable, and important. So when they feel welcome and comfortable and important, we all think about ourselves in this situation. Like, we have fewer worries, we have fewer doubts, we are more confident, we are more comfortable in our own skin, which means we're going to put our best foot forward. We're gonna almost have like the courage to try some things, and we're not even sure if they're gonna work yet. But because we've been made to feel like this, we're gonna risk it, and because it's all in the name of the greater good. And like, we want this thing, this cause, this purpose, this organization for whom we're working and stewarding, we want them to be successful. We want it. We want the mission to be furthered. So that's why I believe it all starts with this, making people feel welcome and comfortable right off the bat. Mm.
You say there are four things great leaders should do to make sure their team feels welcome. And these four things are: help them relax, put their mind at ease, establish credibility, and have fun. Just walk us through those four things and that we should be doing as leaders. Help them relax, put their minds at ease, and establish credibility, have fun. Help walk us through those, why they're important.
Yeah, I remember, like, this was inspired by the way, all those places I've worked, and some leaders I've had that have been really great, some leaders I've had that have been really bad, like everybody else, and several in between. And I remember I was just transitioning from like an operational leadership role at Walt Disney World, one of the resorts, to sales and marketing. And I was a little bit nervous. Like, I wanted to grow, and I wanted a different, you know, I wanted to get some sales marketing experience, because at the time I had only been like a bell service manager, housekeeping manager, front desk manager. I'm out there, you know, just like, you know, get, you know, long hours, a lot of nights and weekends. And I'll never forget my sales director, my very first like big boss in sales. One of my first one-on-ones with him, he said, "Hey man, we're not going to be asking you to change the world anytime soon." He's like, "So just get to know everybody, learn this side of the business, ask great questions like you have been." And in that moment, I was not too much older than I was when I was 22. And that guy, Gaylord Palms, said that, you know, in his keynote speech. It was just 2 or 3 years after that. So now I'm what, the ripe age of 24, 25. It's just magic when you have a leader that looked, and I respected this guy. He'd been there forever and he knew what he was doing. He was charismatic and he's successful. And I'm like, I want some of that. And so for a person like that to tell a person like me, "Just relax, man. We're not going to ask you to change the world." That, for me, I was just like, phew, deep breath. So now imagine what else I'm able to do. And I think he knew that. He knew that about either me, or he knew that about my type of personality. So that's the first thing. Second thing, that's what, help him relax?
Yeah. So the second one is, I'm looking, going ahead, put their minds at ease. Help them relax, put their minds at ease, establish credibility, have fun.
So those two go hand in hand there. and then establishing credibility like that. We know that out here, anybody listen, if you're an author, speaker, a thought leader, you know, it's important. We got it, or a salesperson who might be listening, a marketer, and the same goes for any leader. There has to be sort of this, like, what's in it for them thing. Mm. And so I believe, I don't know about you guys listening and you, Coach Jay, I had this realization several years ago that, like, sales is like leadership and leadership is like sales. Mm. Because in order to do either relatively well, you got to do a couple things relatively quickly. Number one, you got to get people to trust you within short order. And two, you got to be able to influence and inspire people to change direction or inspire them to take some kind of action. Well, a fast pass to being able to do that is to establish some credibility. So things like, here's who I am, here's my story, here's who I've helped, here's who I represent, and here's some rooms I've been in, here's some people like you that I've helped. So that's what I mean by establishing some credibility with those people on your team. And then the having fun parts, that's kind of self-explanatory and simple. I remember my high school basketball coach always used to say, he had three things he would always say: play hard, have fun, listen to your coaches. And the reason, he's like, we got to have fun, because if we don't have fun, we'll be miserable. And if you're miserable, nobody wants to be around you, and this is not going to be worth it. So just like, all these things are not like earth shattering. This is just those simple, not very easy things that sometimes it behooves us all to kind of peel up 30,000 feet and go, okay, let me just unpack this. And what does making them feel welcome mean? And how might that look in my life?
We're talking about welcoming. I do want to say something about the book. The one thing that Taylor does in this book is that at the end of every chapter, he has put hospitality in action, and whatever the chapter is. And so what happens is he will kind of do kind of the summary of actual practical things that you can do to put these chapters in action immediately. And then at the end of every section or part, what he does is he has a thing that you fill out that you have to think through where you're at, what you're doing, and where you're going to go with all this. So this is more than just a book that you're going to read. It is an activity book too. And I really love it for that part, because this isn't a book that I'm asking you to read. I'm asking you to participate. And he is too, because it's a great book. I'm going to move to chapter two. We've talked about welcoming. What about acceptance? You talk about understanding yourself, accepting others, accepting organizational realities. Talk to us about, in this process, connecting acceptance.
Yeah, this is like my version and like my take on, you know, introducing to people that are either up and comers and they haven't heard the term emotional intelligence before, or for seasoned leaders that maybe haven't heard it in a while, or they haven't taken the time to revisit what that looks like for them. So like emotional intelligence, this is how well we know ourselves, how well we know our strengths, how well we can identify some emotions that we have in certain situations, and then how well we can manage them. There's four parts to emotional intelligence: self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, which is our ability to have some empathy, read the room. And then you put all three of those together and you got relationship management. All of these are like imperative and critical for becoming the best leader you can possibly be. And so I just believe that woven through like all four of those elements of emotional intelligence are literally these two things: acceptance and empathy. And with acceptance specifically, all I did was just think about like my own sort of experiences and working with and for and around people like you who, you know, a little bit more seasoned, and you've just done the next several years I'm getting ready to do kind of thing. And I always wanted to be that person for this next generation coming up, and then even some of these people that may be a little bit older than me. So that's why I came up with these three things as it relates to acceptance. We got to be able to accept ourselves for who we are. Like I always wanted to be like a president and a vice president and you know, be a general manager of one of these big fancy resorts out here in Vegas or at Walt Disney World. The reality is they love to hire the finance people for those jobs. Like they have the skill set. It's like they have the DNA. And like, it was just this realization for me and for many people listening, maybe this is you, is where you just, I'm like, I'm never going to be that guy, man. So like, you got to accept yourself for who you are.
Right.
and think about your own gifts, your God-given gifts, and just and think about those and then lean into them. And then the other piece is once we do that, once we're able to, because one of the things that's underlying here is before we can effectively lead other people, it's like we got to figure out how to lead ourselves first. And so this is like that first step, I believe, in being able to do that, or at least, again, a fast pass to get you down the path to being able to do that. And so accepting yourself for who you are. And then that'll almost enable you and allow you to start accepting other people for who they are.
Mm.
And like for me, like also spending some time in sales, it could be, there could be some tough seasons. Like when you're making your numbers, there's nothing better. And like your leaders and the corporate office, like you get celebrated. But when you're not making your numbers, and this was a realization for me that I had when I was leading the sales team at Disney Vacation Club based at the Disneyland Resort. Like it was like a 52-week game. And like each week you either made the number or you didn't. And here I was at the time, that was 10 years ago. So I was like 35, 34, you know, 36. And I'm leading people that are 45, 48, 54, 57. And when we'd make our numbers, they would just feel and look and they'd walk a certain way. But when we didn't make our numbers, we would all feel the pressure from corporate and our leaders. And I would just see them like they were just reduced. And I'm like, I remember being in my office going, this is way before I wrote this book. And I was just like, there's got to be a better way. Like, we're not going to get anywhere with this bunch if they feel like this. So it's accepting other people for who they are, not for what they've accomplished, not for how good they are or are not, but just who they are. And then this one I'm still working on. I don't know about all of you listening or watching, but being able to accept some organizational realities. And this is from like real life situation, a real life leader. One time out here at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas, you know, this is before I went to that Disney Vacation Club role. When I left after 4 years being on the opening team of the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas, I was the director of loyalty marketing. And see, my whole plan, man, was I was going to work for Disney coming out of undergrad, go get a fancy, you know, MBA, Ivy League, come to Las Vegas, shoot up the ranks, and then go back to Disney and become the next Bob Iger. So when I was in this Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas season, dude, I was this guy in the meeting, man. I was the guy that was like, well, I don't know why we have to, and how come she keeps doing? It'd be so much simpler if. And so one day I had a leader literally put his arm around me. He's like, bro, let's go take a walk, man. And we did. We walked downstairs through the casino, out the side door, took a left, and walked in front of the Bellagio fountains. And he's like, man, you got to learn to accept some organization. You got some good ideas, and we're probably going to do some of them one of these days. But, dude, you got to learn to accept some organizational realities, because if you don't, you're going to have like an ulcer and be in the hospital by the age of like 40. And he's like, if you can just take all that energy and all that passion and just put it into some stuff you can control and let go of these things that you can't, and that's all about acceptance. That's why I have those three things. And when we do that, when we do those three things, and it's not going to happen overnight. I'm just recommending. And by the way, I'm in the boat with everybody listening. I am still working on every single thing I put in any of my books, literally right now. And but it's when we can work on those things and be intentional about them, it's amazing how much more joy we have and how much more success tends to come our way.
You're so right. His name is Taylor Scott. The book is titled Lead with Hospitality, Be Human, Emotionally Connect, Serve Selflessly. It's outstanding. Get it wherever books are sold. You're going to love it. I'm just telling you, it's more than a book. It's a workbook too. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. And we're back here on A New Direction with Taylor Scott, his book, Lead with Hospitality, Be Human, Emotionally Connect, Serve Selflessly. We just finished up Connect, part one. We're launching into part two, Serve. And Taylor, let's jump right into chapter three, Empathy. Understanding before explanation wins over hearts and minds. And you give us a little statistic here. According to Business Solvers in 2020 State of the Workplace Empathy Report, 83% of employees would consider leaving their current organization for a similar role at a more empathetic organization. And 74% of employees said they would work longer hours for an empathetic employer. Let's talk about the role of empathy in regards to serving.
Yeah, I'm sure we've all heard about this and we all know it. It's kind of like sending handwritten thank you cards. We know we should do it, but how often do we actually do it? And I don't know about everybody listening, but before I made my career transition from having actual jobs, like roles, like where you were leading teams and people for a corporation, to getting into what I'm doing now, which starting my own business and sort of this author, speaker, consultant, thought leader type role. I didn't really understand the extent to which empathy is a skill. And that's really good news. That's really good news for all of us, because that means that we can get better at it. Mm-hmm. All we got to do is be intentional about practicing it. Mm-hmm. And so this is just, I believe, another fast pass as it relates to emotionally connecting with people such that we can then serve them first before we start asking them to do anything. And I don't know about everybody listening, but for me, it was always like, you could probably look back right now and you could probably have on one count on one hand, the number of, let alone leaders that you've ever had, but people in your life that actually have the wherewithal and that they actually take the time to seek to understand and to be curious about what it is that you're venting about, what it is that you're complaining about, what it is that you are feeling emotional about before they start telling you, here's how to solve your problems. Mm. And so empathy is just a way that it further connects us. And it's like, I often make the joke, which is, I'm only half joking, but this is one of those things that when we're the ones that do it, when we actually show up like this, people, whether it's somebody that you're leading or it's a partner that's, a peer of yours, or even our own leaders, even friends and family, our spouses and our own personal lives. When we are the people that show up and actually get curious and seek to understand and say something like, man, if what happened to you had happened to me, I would probably be just as frustrated as you are. I often joke, it's kind of like they're like Anna from Frozen. They'll be like, for the first time in forever, I've got a leader that actually took the time to actually understand and even relate to my situation. So that's where I'm coming from with the whole empathy component.
You in this chapter, you talk about the willingness to adapt. And you talk about, as a leader, continually ask how you should adapt to better serve your teams. Let's talk about that for just a second, what you're really trying to dig into there in terms of the willingness to adapt.
Yeah, it's like showing them, we got it. Saying we get it is one thing, and that's sometimes a big step in the right direction. And we've all been there when we have leaders that just, it doesn't matter. We're the ones doing the work. We're the ones out here, getting killed. We're the ones out here getting beat up by customers or clients or having to deal with the operational constraints. It's like that Brené Brown quote, unless you're in the arena getting your butt kicked with me, I'm not interested in your feedback kind of thing. but when we have the courage to trust people before we know we can, when we have the courage to listen to them and go, you know what? I value you. I value your perspective. Let's give your idea a shot. Those are things I was recalling as I was, putting this together, and these little micro moments that you could almost feel the relationship solidifying. That's where I'm coming from there. That's why I'm so passionate about it. That's what I mean by being able to adapt and then owning it, even if it doesn't work. I remember, was it 12, 15 years ago now, the great Seth Godin, he had that big, huge book, and the title of it was "This Might Not Work."
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But that's the point, is when we're able to be courageous enough and vulnerable enough with the people that we're leading to be like, this might not work, but you know what? I care about you so much. And I kind of understand, if I put myself in your shoes, what this must feel like for you, then you know what? Let's try this a different way, because you're worth it. Mm.
You know, I was thinking about this because, you know, when you said as a leader, continually ask yourself, you know, how you should adapt to better serve your teams. I was thinking, you know, it requires humility to be willing to adapt to your people. Because you have to put your agenda aside here and have to be willing to say, okay, well, what's in the best interest of my people, not necessarily what's in the best interest of me. And that could be a hard jump, I would think, for leaders. How do we get there?
I think you got to let go. And you got to ask yourself, you got to ask yourself really why you're making the decisions you're making. Is it for you and your own ego, or is it for the greater good? Pretty much what it comes down to. I remember a mentor a long time ago now. It was in grad school. They had this thing where we would do group work, and they brought in like these fancy executives that had gone to, you know, I went to graduate school at Cornell. So like they took these fancy Cornell grads who'd gone out and done great things, and they brought them back to campus for a leadership development weekend. And they put us in these groups and said, okay, y'all do group work. And they assigned a coach to each group. And they just watched us do group work, solving problems together, case studies. And then at the end of the weekend, they gave us feedback, individual feedback, and then collective feedback. And boy, I mean, I'm 27, 28 years old, and you've got this executive that's just watching you work with your four or five classmates. And my feedback, one of the big things I got was, and I've not forgotten it since, like, I remember like it was yesterday. This guy goes, man, you got a lot of passion. You got a lot of energy, and that stuff you can't teach, and you're going to do some great things. I have no doubts. He's like, man, but you say I think a lot. Like everything was like, well, I think the problem is, well, I think we should probably, well, I think what she's saying. He's like, dude, if you're going to be a leader, if you want to grow in leadership, you got to switch that. Like, it's not what we think. It's what we can do to get everybody else to share what they think. That is, I believe, the answer to your question.
Yeah, that's beautiful right there. I'm going to move to chapter 4, service. The secondary title of this is to serve is to LEAD, lead, listen, educate, act, and deliver. I want to talk about service, the impact of serving your team, and how to serve with lead. So let's dig into that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, this is really one of those fundamental things that when leaders lead with hospitality, we like to say, we'll have frontline teams that deliver memorable hospitality. And not just in the hospitality industry, but to your point, at the open, whether you're working oil or insurance or manufacturing, whatever an attorney, a doctor, chances are you're not doing it all by yourself. You got to have a team, you got to have people around you. So you're going to want those in your organization to deliver this memorable experience to the guests, customers, and clients that you have. And so this for me was just like a little bit of an osmosis thing. So like when the people on our team see us and feel us being the people that are actually listening to them, that are actually seeking to understand, using their empathy, and then when they're teaching us, when they're imparting their knowledge and sharing with us some of their gifts, things that mistakes they've made, and showing us what might help us not only today, but will continue to help us on into our life and into our career. I mean, when we're seeing our leaders out there with us, you know, getting their butt kicked with us. Like, for example, this was so impressionable. I think I put it in the book, one of the illustrations, one of the real life stories I had in this chapter were my leaders when I was at Gaylord Palms, that 22, 23 year old me that was a housekeeping manager. And I mean, we had 1400 rooms, and on a big checkout day, like that was really hard. And so I had my executive housekeeper and my director of housekeeping. They were out there like stripping rooms and taking trash down and like helping me like unclog the linen chute, you know, with me. And like when I would see them out there with us, I would work that much harder. And then delivering, like we all know when we get into the leadership role, there's kind of like this unwritten promise that we have to everyone that we are there to solve your problems. And so like this is about the D is deliver, like delivering on your promise as a leader, everything from making sure that they have the tools, information, and resources that they need to do their job, but also just deliver on your promise to be there for them. No matter what the situation is, they know that you're there. And then what ends up happening is when we serve them before we ask them to serve us or serve any other thing, this is when we're also going to, there's that old elephant again. Imagine how that's going to make them feel. It's like Anna from Frozen yet again, for the first time and forever. I've got a leader that's out here with me. Man, if my general manager, I remember one time at Gaylord Palms, our general manager, we were getting killed on the front drive. Like a big group was checking in. And like I was a Bell Services manager at that point. We couldn't keep up. I'm out there. I'm soaking wet. It's hot and humid. General manager of the resort. Guy's name is John Caparella, a mini legend in our industry. He's out there writing valet tickets, welcoming guests. Well, we had no excuse. Like, you better believe our guys are running back from valet lots. You better believe I'm going and hitting guest doors and welcoming to Gaylord Palms. Sorry about the wait. Can I help you with your luggage? That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So when we have leaders that do that, imagine what that's going to do for your team and how they show up to serve your guests, customers, and clients.
What do you mean by we got to get in the sauce?
Yeah, my first client when I like started to try to break off and, you know, create my own business was at the Brown Hotel, historic hotel in downtown Louisville. I'm from Kentucky. So for me, it was like this. That was a tough transition time for me. And that experience was great because it sort of woke me back up. Mm-hmm. And I lived on property at the Brown Hotel for 6 weeks because they needed some help. They needed an extra leadership hand, some eyes out there. They valued where I'd come from, Disney, and they wanted me to work with the new leaders that they had outside on the front drive in Bell Services, Bell and Valet, but also in J. Graham's Cafe, where the famous Kentucky Hot Brown was born, by the way, back in the kitchen there, if you're familiar with that dish. It's a magical property, old, 100 years old, over 100 years old. And the general manager's a guy named Brad Walker. At the time, he's now retired, just retired within the last year, but at the time he'd been there like 16, 17 years. And he was like kind of showing me the ropes. And he was like, all right, so here's what I need you to do. You're going to work outside and help the valet and Bell team. Cause we'll get busy in the mornings. Then there's this lull out front, but then like around breakfast, like I'm going to talk 6, 7 in the morning, but then, so then like 9 a.m. Well, J. Graham's Cafe, big breakfast spot in Louisville. He's like, I need you to come inside. And especially on the weekends, there'd be this breakfast buffet. And he's like, I'm not talking about coming in and like playing pretend general manager, walking around, just watching. And just, he's like, no, man, I need you in the sauce. I'm like, what do you mean? And here again, this guy would come in on his day off on Sundays. He would literally be going, taking out the empty potato tray from the buffet, physically walking it back to the kitchen, to the sink, going to the prep area, getting a brand new tray of breakfast potatoes, taking them back to the buffet, and then showing the guests and letting them know we've got some bread. He's like, that's what I mean. So like, what does that look like for you in your business and your industry? Get in the sauce with your, not only with your teams, but get in the sauce with the experience that your guests, customers, and clients are experiencing themselves. So you know firsthand. You know firsthand what's going well. You know firsthand what needs to be done. And you're out there with them, a part of the process, a part of co-creating this experience that we all want them to have, a great one, so that they'll come back and tell stories and spend more money and all the things.
His name is Taylor Scott. The book is titled Lead with Hospitality. Isn't he good? So good. Be human, emotionally connect, serve selflessly. Get it wherever books are sold. It's outstanding. It's a great book. It's a workbook as well. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. And we're back here on New Direction with my friend Taylor Scott and his book, Lead with Hospitality, Be Human, Emotionally Connect, Serve Selflessly. We just finished up part two because we've gone through connect, right? And then we've gone to serve. Now we're in part three, engage. And so Taylor, chapter five, we start with comfort, curiosity, conversations, and relationships happen where people feel secure. So making them feel comfortable will, I don't know how many people are going to buy into that one. So you got to help us cross that bridge, Taylor, into why am I helping my people feel comfortable?
Yeah, because we want them to be comfortable getting uncomfortable. Like, raise your hand if everything is absolutely perfect in every possible metric, every possible corner of your business, of your team. Yeah. So, like, we're always in this state where, sure, we got to celebrate when things are going well, but we're always in this state of figuring out, okay, where did we come up short and how can we get better next time? And so one of the first steps, and a lot of this, by the way, is less about what we do, it's less about what we say, but it's all about the environment we create as leaders. We gotta build an environment where people feel like we talked about, but we also want to create an environment where people have this, like, where they make the choice to do more. They make the choice to fight through it, as my old basketball coach used to say, or they make the choice to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And so that's what I mean. So, like, for example, letting them know that, you know, it's okay to not be okay. Because if we set the standard of perfection, sure, sounds good. It worked for, like, on Remember the Titans. Like, God bless them. Man, they were perfect on that night, the Mighty Mighty Titans. Okay, it was Hollywood, and it was Disney. And, you know, God bless them. But, like, this is the real world. And while I am a fan of joy and inspiration and believing in the magic we can create, it's an unrealistic expectation to have everybody be perfect. So when we can create an environment where people realize, man, it's okay to not be okay, but also we don't have to stay that way, people then feel secure and they feel more comfortable taking some risks. They feel comfortable trying some new things or new ways of doing things in the spirit of learning. Once again, the old, you know, I shouldn't say old, but once again, the great John Maxwell, you know, he likes to say, we're either going to win or we're going to learn. And that's what I'm talking about. We've got to build this environment where people are okay trying some new things, because even if it doesn't work, man, we're going to learn and we're going to get better the next time. And I'm looking at a book that's right behind your right shoulder. Really, this is inspired by Carol Dweck's research with the growth mindset versus fixed mindset. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You say something in this chapter. I'm going to read the quote, and I want you to just kind of expand on it. You said, leading with hospitality means actively spending time with one's team, partners, peers, mentors, and especially guests, customers, and clients. That's step one. But step two is the most important and possibly the most hospitable stop, and that is to take an interest in your people. Talk about that in depth here a little bit.
Yeah, when I first started, when I was still at the Cosmopolitan, I would do a blog. I was, like, testing the waters, you know. I'm like, I found out I was passionate about writing and I wanted to get into speaking. And I love the book, The Fred Factor, by the great Mark Sanborn. And I wrote him an email. And anyway, short story longer, we ended up forming a relationship. He ended up, I would write blogs about real life Freds out in the world. Like, I have my own books now. I'm still selling this guy's book, The Fred Factor, four life changing principles we can all learn from Fred the Postman. I love it. It changed my life, basically. It sounds dramatic, but it really changed changed my whole outlook back in, like, 2004. So anyway, he ended up hiring me to go do keynotes on his behalf. He taught me how to do keynotes, and I would go do the Fred Factor thing. And I love a lot of what he has to say and always says and what he writes. But one of the things I love the most is he said, be interested more than you try to come across interesting. Here we go again. Imagine being the person that does that. Think about how that makes you feel when somebody else in your life, whether it's a partner, a friend, a family member, a coworker, especially a leader, is more interested in you, is more interested in what's working, what's not working, and more so, how can I help? What barriers do I need to help break down? What meetings, relationships can I help broker for you? How can I help you? Imagine what that feels like for the first time and forever yet again. That's what I'm talking about.
I love that. I'm jumping to chapter 6 because you're getting into one of my core values. Well, there's several core values you jumped in, but this one is really one of my big ones, and this is genuine kindness. Chapter 6, a gift worth giving because it's always well received. Kindness and leadership often are two words that we don't put together. I know they go together well in hospitality. I think that makes sense. But in leadership, oftentimes this is not a word that we associate. So help us bridge that gap. Why kindness, genuine kindness, is so important to us in leading with hospitality.
Yeah, I will answer this one in this way. When I was writing this all those years ago, this chapter was going to be on courteousness or courtesy, because that was always one of Disney's like main things: safety, courtesy, efficiency, show, and then now inclusivity is their fifth key. They call them the five keys. It used to be called the four quality standards, and then it hit me though, like it's possible to be very courteous. Like I've had some courteous leaders. I don't know about you, but then come to find out, it's all fake. You can fake courtesy. And that's why I wanted to like really dig a little deeper. And I'm like, if we're going to do this right, if we're going to do this in such a way that it does all the things, makes people feel welcome, comfortable, important. If it builds this, it creates this environment where people feel safe enough to try new things and make a mistake and it's okay to not be okay, then it's got to be more genuine. And so I then started just digging in, and you know, from writing four books of your own, it doesn't all just come together. Sometimes we sit here and we're like, what are we going to write? How are we going to? So I just Google words a lot of the time. So I Google the word kindness, and what I found that embedded within the true meaning of kindness is generosity. Mm. So one being genuine, that's like what I mean by that is like authentic, which means not fake. Mark Sanborn has a great one-liner. I don't know if he made it up, but he delivers it well. And I use it all the time. He's like, don't fake it till you make it, because when you make it, you'll be a fake.
Mm.
So genuine, number one, that's authentic. Coming from this place of like, this is real. No, this is it, man. This is really who I am. And then kindness is like doing things for other people, like doing things without any expectation of anything in return. And I know I write about this, and I know I speak about this, and I'm very passionate about it, but I'll be the first to tell you, I am working on this in this moment right now. Mm. It's hard when you put your heart on the line. It's hard when you work really hard. It's hard when you give your time, when you give your talent, and you give your heart to something, and you're not getting in return. Sometimes the hardest thing to do is wait and be patient. But this also can be, in leadership, it can also be a competitive advantage. Mm. For all the reasons we've been talking about, because people will respect you more, because you will be different. Like you will be somebody that for once they can trust.
Mm. Mm. I'm going to jump ahead here to the fourth part, inspire, right? We connected, we've served. We've engaged. Now we're inspiring. And I know in chapter 8, we talk about importance, but I'm going to jump further down the road as we kind of winding up here. And I'm going to jump to chapter 9, because grace is a word that I love. I love the word grace. And you say amazing grace wins every time. And I think this is an important leadership quality. I believe, again, it's one of those leadership qualities that's never talked about, but is one that is fundamentally important to great leadership, is grace. So let's talk about grace a little bit.
Yeah, three things really, as we boil it down, that I came up with, things that, how we can like put them into action kind of thing. It's one, especially right now and the way the world is, the way society is can we be graceful with our words? Can we be graceful with our actions? Again, easier said than done, especially when we have when the stakes are high. Second thing is can we ask for some grace? Hey, can I have a little bit more time on that? Or I completely messed up, whether it's somebody that's on our team or a leader that we're reporting to or a partner across the aisle, you know, working in a different department or a client. I missed the mark. Got a lot going on. That's not an excuse. I just want to ask for some grace here. I'm going to make it up to you. Mm. And then the third one is can we give a little grace? And I love the Lisa Turkhurst. She's a pastor and an author. She speaks a lot of time out here at Central Christian Church, where I go to church out here in Henderson, Nevada, close to Vegas. I might have to paraphrase it, but I think I put it in here somewhere. But she says, I give grace because I so desperately need grace. And it just comes down to the humanness element here. Like, great leaders are not great because of their leadershipness. Great leaders are great because of their humanness. And that's what I mean when I say grace. Because this once again can set us apart. This once again can help us connect with people in a way that maybe no other leader has. And when we do that, now we're going to be able to get the most out of that person. We're going to inspire them to do more, become more, give more, and really deliver their absolute best work, which is really, really sort of fundamental to the whole reason we need leaders in the first place.
I know we're short on time here, but I want to just say something about grace, because you'd also talk about forgiveness in here, which I equated with mercy. And you know, I've always defined grace, you know, people want to throw it as a more of a church connotation, and I have defined it very differently. I have defined it in terms of, you know, grace is a gift I give to someone they don't deserve.
That's right.
Mercy is withholding punishment to someone who does deserve it. And I think that's where forgiveness comes in, is, you know, you probably don't deserve forgiveness, but I'm going to withhold my punishment of you and forgive you, which is mercy and grace tied together. And I think those two things are critical to great leaders, because, and you talk about this in the book, you know, the superhuman leader versus the human leader. You know, listen, I've made my share of mistakes along this path. I still make my share of mistakes. I don't say the right things all the time. I don't do the right things all the time. I blow it often. And I'm willing to take responsibility for those things that I blow, because I don't mind holding myself accountable to that, because it's part of my own humanness or humanity. But it really is important as leaders that we do understand grace and mercy, I think. And I just think it's too powerful to ignore as part of your leadership piece. Have I got that right, or have I went over the edge?
No, I agree. And here's why. Because like the very next chapter, now we get into strategic planning and coaching.
Right.
So like that, and I did it on purpose, sort of the symbol, like to create sort of some, what we call symmetry or symbolism or something. I'm trying to build this like sort of model where, like, if we've had that grace moment, we've met, as we say in the South, we got to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
Like, we've met them where they are. We've had conversations. We've engaged.
Yeah.
We've connected. We've accepted. We've served. We've engaged. We've even given grace. We've even asked for grace. Well, now if they keep doing it, now if they do it again, hopefully we've earned the right to give them some feedback. We've earned the right to coach them for a better way forward. And so that's why I did it in that order, is because if we've been somebody, if we've been a leader in their life, if we've been a person in their life, that person in their life that has taken those steps along the way, when it comes time to have a difficult conversation, it's much more simple. It's not always easy, but it's simple for us to go, talked about that, we had the grace moment, and we talked about coming out of that grace moment, and now here it is happening again. So let's together agree on some ways we can go forward.
Right.
And that's where this accountability piece can really come in. And that's where I believe accountability, at that point, if we've led with hospitality along the way, when it comes time to have the difficult conversations, accountability doesn't have to be a bad word. It doesn't have to be a big dramatic thing. It can be pretty simple.
We've done our time. We've actually gone a little over. I apologize for that. But this has been awesome. I've enjoyed our time. We've done an hour. It always goes by so stinking fast. I hate it. How can people get a hold of you to hire you, to get you to keynote? I know you consult, and I know you coach, and I know you do a number of things. How do people find you to do that?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me. I love all the work you're doing. I took a look at some of your stuff here and appreciate you having me on. I know you turn a lot of people away for this, so I am grateful. I really appreciate it. And I'd love to connect with anybody. If this landed with anybody, if you want to know more, if you want to connect, leadwithhospitality.com is our website. And you can reach me at taylor@leadwithhospitality.com. I'm also on Instagram, tscott1502, and also on LinkedIn, where a lot of people might be watching this right now.
Yeah. Yeah, they're watching Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitch, Twitter, all live. So, yeah, and spell hospitality correctly. It's HOSPITALITY. I only say that because I misspelled it 6 times, and he wasn't getting any of my emails, and I couldn't figure out why until he pointed it out to me. So just letting people know, I misspelled hospitality. There you have it. I don't mind saying that. My bad. Taylor, stay with me. Hey, folks, this show, you know what I say to you every week? You know what? You're in control of 3 things, your attitude, your effort, and your resiliency. Life doesn't give us what we want, and oftentimes our circumstances are not what we've chosen. But you know what? You're still in control of your attitude. It's not always easy to control your attitude, but it is under your control. Choose a positive attitude today. And you know what? Your effort's tied to your excellence. We don't always have the same amount of energy in the tank, but we can be excellent with whatever we have. And that's up to you to make that choice of how excellent you want to be. And then finally, resiliency. We all get punched in the gut or knocked in the teeth and we get knocked down. It's up to you to get back up. Why? Because you're worth it and we want you on the team. I'll be back next week with another great guest, another great book. It means it's automatically another great show. You had a lot of choices. You chose us. I thank you for that, and I'm so grateful that you did. Give us a thumbs up on YouTube if you watched us there today or any day. And wherever you're listening to this show, whatever the podcast platform is, give us a 5-star review and let us know what you think. And you're always welcome to chime in. As I say to you all over the world, I thank you so much. And ciao, every Sunday.
To go a different way, yeah. The time has come, your dreams will take.